Cole, as far as SEC Media Days, you know, you've been covering them for a while now as well. Has the attitude of the coaches changed? I don't know if it's because of social media or whatever, but it just seems like year in and year out, there's more and more layers being built up between coaches and the media.
I think for some it has. For some it hasn't. Kirby Smart came in here and did 10 interviews yesterday. And some other – have you seen another coach come through here?
Not yet.
Yeah, he's the only coach that I've seen come through.
Obviously, we're anticipating Nick Saban, Jeremy Pruitt today. We're anticipating Derek
Mason on
Thursday.
Oh, you're anticipating those coming through here today?
Well, on Radio Row, yes.
Okay. I think Jeremy will come through. I'm interested that you think Nick Saban's going to walk through here. So, we'll see. I think the way that it's set up now, today, and for this SEC Media Days, it's easier for those guys to just bypass Radio Row. Their relationship with the media, I think more coaches have become more savvy to it, Johnny, and they have been able to utilize it as a way to deliver a message when they need to, be it about a personal agenda, a team agenda, an individual agenda, whatever it is. And the guys that understand that can manipulate it as so. But I think it's always going to be sort of a give and take. And with social media, they're definitely more guarded. And because we had Kirby Smart on my show yesterday, and I see a guy on Twitter – and he takes a quote that Kirby Smart says, and he takes half of it, and he says, I guess Kirby Smart's not as high on his offensive line as we thought. And I asked him about it. I said, Coach, I think you have the best offensive line returning in the SEC.
Right, I agree.
And this guy on Twitter is saying that because of what you said yesterday, he doesn't think you're confident in your offensive line. He's like, I'm very confident in my offensive line. I think we got a great group. I think we got a physical group. I love who we were at the end of last year. We lost a first-round draft pick, but – we're going to move Andrew Thomas over to left tackle, and I think those guys are going to be great. So I think that part of it does frustrate them as to you can't just take one part of a gigantic thing that I said and make it what you want it to be. And that's where I think a disconnect comes that forces them to be a little bit more guarded and maybe just standoffish.
I think the ones that really stand out as far as with their intensity, their standoffishness, their attitudes – are the ones that are also representing programs that, you know, they aspire to be national champions. I mean, we look at recent years, all the national champions in college football, and look who their head coach were. Now, of course, Nick Saban takes five of those nine, but Jimbo Fisher, you know, you're talking about intensity going back over the last 10-plus years, and I don't know if that's one of the traits that you have to have to be a successful head coach, especially one where you're the last team standing. I mean, you've played football, you played under Tommy Tuberville. From your perspective and your week in and week out dealings with coaches, I mean, what do you think about that?
I would think if you're not a perennial power and if you don't know 100% that you have the talent to compete for a spot in the playoff, you should probably be doing anything you can to promote your program. Because there are guys – look what Lane Kiffin has done for FAU. I mean, people are talking about him. We're talking about what if they beat Oklahoma. That's a real discussion right now. I think they're 28-point underdogs.
Yeah, it won't be a real discussion at halftime.
So it's like, but what he has done through the media and on social media has sort of propelled his program to that spot. They don't have the guys to be one of the four teams in the playoff, but people are saying, could FAU be that team? So I think the guys who go out and do more and understand that the media can be a valuable resource for you, if that's where my program was, that's the route that I would take. I'd come sit down with every radio show in here. And, yeah, it's exhausting and it's tiring, but you're making $4, 5, 7 million a year. Promote your program. Make people like your program. Do everything you can to make your program better. Take this one day and go above and beyond.
I go back to when we talk about, for example, Jeremy Pruitt, you know, what he was like as a defensive coordinator. You think about his stops, Florida State, Georgia, Alabama. Did he always get along with his head coach? I mean, certainly you hear all the rumors and everything that came out of Athens, Georgia, and his relationship with Mark Richt, for example. But is it a bad thing in the sense that, you know, it'd be one thing if you've got a team that's capable of winning 8 or 9 games. It's different when you're talking about a program that had the talent to win a national championship and didn't get it done. a program where the fans have been wanting a national championship since 1980. Is it bad that Jeremy Pruitt had issues with Mark Richt?
No.
I don't think so either.
You get along with everybody you work with?
Heck no.
No.
I try to,
but there were people on my football team at Auburn that I didn't like.
I mean, I have guests on a weekly basis, and I agree sometimes about 75% of the time. The 25% of the time, I will, if I'm really headstrong about a certain topic, I'm not going to back down.
Now, if you bring to me some facts that say a certain coach was trying to have another coach fired, things of that nature, and there was, you know, backstabbing and manipulating and things of that nature, well, that's a different discussion. But just two guys that don't get along and don't see eye to eye, especially when you're talking about strategy and managing a team and running a team and calling plays, there's always going to be difference of opinion there. So that doesn't bother me at all. I think Jeremy's going to be a good fit. It's interesting that you bring him up, though, following the question about how would you manage your team in the media. I also think it's fair for people like Jeremy and people like Chad Morris yesterday to use the media to sort of help manage expectations.
Right.
And that should be done, and that's fair, because Tennessee fans need to understand that, number one, probably don't have the personnel to do what they want to do right now. Number two, it's going to be very different than what they've been doing before. So there's going to be a bigger learning curve there. And
right.
Number three, we just flat out don't have the guys. I don't care what your last coach says about how many stars and where they were ranked and this and that. We don't have the guys to go compete with the teams that you want us to beat. Sorry, that's reality. Jeremy Pruitt, I think, is – you could make the argument that this is the most difficult SEC coaching takeover in the last 15, 20 years. Where that roster is, what the fans expect, and what the program has been before, all of that put together – this is going to be a big challenge. He's up for it, but it's going to be a big challenge. And this is not something that's getting turned around by week five of this season. So I think it's fair to use it for that also. And I think Jeremy Pruitt will do a good job. I've told you before, I think he put a great staff together. I think he understands ball. He relates to players very well. You cannot view how savvy he is or is not with the media as to what kind of head football coach he's going to be.
I think the problem, by the way, visiting with Cole Kubelik with the SEC Network, I think the problem is you have the boosters who remember what Tennessee was, a Tennessee that won a national championship in the late 90s, and the other part of the equation is you have student-athletes that don't remember when Tennessee was relevant in the East, in the SEC, on the national landscape as far as college football. And when we start talking about Tennessee being important again in the East and being in that picture as far as the national championship, both of those points have to meet together eventually, 2, 3, 4 years, however long it takes.
No, I would agree with that. It's kind of like we talked about yesterday. We were talking Ole Miss, and I said, you know, I keep telling you guys, and you can imagine people in my listening area in Birmingham, Alabama, don't want to hear this, don't believe this, and have called me crazy for saying this, but that week three game in Oxford, Mississippi is very dangerous for a lot of reasons. One of the reasons it's dangerous, there's a lot of people in that facility that believe it can be done.
Right.
Because they've seen it. They've seen it happen in that stadium. And just because there's not a ton of players on that team that did it, there are guys around it that believe it. There are fans around it that believe it because they've seen it. How many fans in Knoxville, Tennessee believe they can beat Alabama?
Not this year.
How many people in that facility really believe they can beat Alabama?
Not this year.
And seen it in a long time. Now, that's not picking on Tennessee, because there's a lot of teams in the SEC who don't have many people in their facility that haven't seen a win against Alabama. You think there's a lot of people in Fayetteville?
I mean, here's the thing.
You think there's people in Starkville that think they can beat Alabama?
Now, I mean, in Starkville, they do.
Really?
Oh,
last time that happened.
Well, I'm just telling you, Mississippi
State. Sylvester Croom was the coach.
Mississippi State.
I'm just saying.
Mississippi State actually believes
it. They were close.
You go back to Ole Miss, that's a good thing, because we had Jordan Tiamu on our show yesterday, and think about what he has at his disposal. I mean, here's a guy that certainly he wants to be in the NFL. He's got his three starting wide receivers back, 2,600 combined yards last year receiving, 25 touchdowns scored. And what is the biggest weakness for Alabama this year on defense? It's the secondary. You got talent back there, but you don't know what they're going to be, because you lose your top six defensive backs from last season. And so you bring up, that's a very good point. I mean, Alabama, Ole Miss, week three you brought up, I mean, that could be upset central.
I think we'll know who the Alabama starting quarterback is by then. They're going to have a guy. And let's also take this dynamic a little bit further. Jalen Hurts has done it there. Jalen Hurts almost got his jaw broken by Marquise Haynes, down 21 and found a way to win in that stadium.
Right.
How does that change things? But we'll know who the guy is, because I think going into that environment, they're going to have to know who the guy is. You have a completely new secondary for a defense that, with a new defensive coordinator, by the way, who hasn't called a game in this league against the most powerful offense in this league. And you have a defense that, with all an entire new secondary, just lost their best pass rusher to an ACL injury last week, who it is probably more important to be on the same page mentally in that defense as it is to have talent. That defense, more than any other defense in this league, you better know where to be and why you need to be there. So there are a lot of things that make it very intriguing. And a mobile quarterback, a quarterback that can hurt you between the tackles. You mentioned the best receiving core in college football. I think DK Metcalf is going to take the top off college football this year. He is going to explode. And, by the way, he just happens to have the guy who a lot of people think is the best receiver in the country on the other side of him. A.J. Brown gets all the talk right now. But
he does.
I promise DK Metcalf is going to get just as much or more by probably week four.
I think about the first 3 weeks. If we are talking about in week two, South Carolina pulling the upset, beating Georgia, and then week three, we're talking about Alabama losing to Ole Miss. What will that mean for the SEC in 2018?
It means the national writers will tell us how bad the league is. But I think it's great, because here's my 1,000-foot view of the SEC. It's Alabama, Georgia, or Auburn. That's fine. Everybody here is going to take that easy out, okay? Georgia wins the East. Alabama wins the West. Maybe Auburn wins the West, because they're as close or closer than anybody else. I think there are 6, 7, maybe 8 teams that are a component or two away from being problematic in this league. I'm not saying they're going to win their division. I'm not saying they're going to win the SEC. But could be a problem for other teams that we expect to go on and win the division. You mentioned a couple early games. Let's go a step further. South Carolina welcomes Georgia week two. That's a pretty big game.
Right.
Auburn, Washington, a big game.
Right.
Auburn also has LSU week three. What if LSU beats Miami week one? How different is LSU-Auburn if Auburn beats Washington? That's all of a sudden, that's a huge game in Jordan-Hare Stadium week three, 2:30 on CBS. So you got that big one, and you – what if Texas A&M upsets Clemson?
I don't anticipate that happening, but it's not an easy trip.
They got
for
Alabama week four after Alabama gets Ole Miss.
I know. I mean, that's we'll
but
know.
I'm just saying, right now, every Alabama fan that calls into my radio show says, "We'll see y'all in November." I ain't got nothing till November. Okay. All of a sudden, Ole Miss upsets you, and you got to play Texas A&M that beats Clemson. Well, there's another game before November that you got to worry about. I think Missouri and Tuscaloosa is intriguing. I think that's week five, week six maybe. That's an intriguing game for all the reasons we just talked about playing Ole Miss. Drew Locke and company are going to be able to move the ball. And if Alabama sort of flips the script and becomes this, well, we'll beat you in a track meet style game, still playing good defense but not the defense that we normally play, but our offense is so high powered it doesn't matter, Missouri can go track meet, Ole Miss can go track meet, Auburn can go track meet, A&M might be able to go track meet, so it changes the dynamic of the entire league. You look at that Georgia schedule. At South Carolina, week two is very intriguing. They're at Missouri and at LSU also in the first half of the season.
Right.
Go look at Missouri's schedule. The back end of the Missouri schedule is a joke. Now, Missouri lose Alabama. That's fine. That's fine. Because we've seen you can lose a conference game and be in Atlanta. It's not like that can't happen. Missouri can still lose to Alabama.
You can win a conference game and win the national championship.
There you go. Well, what if Missouri, even if they lose to Alabama, what if they get Georgia early? I mean, all of a sudden the dynamic of the league changes. This is going to be a more fun first quarter of the season than I think we've had in a really long time. And we don't look at it that way because we don't have all these monster matchups week one. Alabama and Louisville is not very intriguing.
No.
I think LSU-Miami is. I think Auburn-Washington is. Week two, A&M-Clemson is. Georgia-South Carolina is huge. That's exactly when South Carolina needs to get Georgia. Exactly when. I wish it was a night game because Willie B is going to be rocking. And it's also going to be about 115 on the field. But if that game was at night, that would be an incredible atmosphere and a lot of fun to watch. So I think Kentucky at Florida week two. We'll be there for that game. That's intriguing because Kentucky could be a problem. They're
Benny
another team.
Snell Jr. and his teammates cannot wait to take on the Florida Gators.
And Florida's a big question mark in the league. You know, we went through all those teams. I think Florida's a team leadership and toughness. That will be the component that they need. They're the one thing away that they are. Mississippi State, can they get explosive at wide receiver? Ole Miss, can they get any stops? If they get any stops, they're going to be a different team. South Carolina needs a playmaker on defense. They need a guy. Javon Kinlaw is great up front, but they need a dude who can take the ball away, who can get you a sack. A Minkah Fitzpatrick-type playmaker that just can find a way to be around the ball and change the game at certain points in time. They'll still play good defense because T-Rob and Will are that good, but they need a playmaker on that side of the ball. I think Kentucky, even with the quarterback situation, Gunnar Hoke, Terry Wilson, it doesn't matter because Eddie Grant can work around that. They have Ahmad Wagner, the basketball transfer from Iowa, who's going to be interesting to watch at receiver, and Dorian Baker comes back from injury. They need those two, but they have to get disruptive up front. The second, third levels of their defense are great. Matt House is going to have two good levels to work with. If he can get anything from that defensive line, I'm telling you, Kentucky is going to be a handful for a lot of teams this year. Don't judge Kentucky by what happened mid to late last year. I was in Kroger Stadium when they lost that game to Florida last year.
Right.
Johnny, I have never seen anything like it. 40, 50,000 Kentucky fans didn't know what to do. I'm talking 30 minutes after the game. Sitting on their hands in that stadium, couldn't leave because they literally couldn't believe what just happened. So how do you think that team felt 2, 3, 4 weeks after that? That's tough to bounce back from because other teams have a chance to be real problems in the league.
Before we let you go, one final question. You're talking about, you know, coaches using the media to, you know, as far as expectations are concerned. I thought in so many ways Bush Jones tried to lower expectations. Jeremy Pruitt, is it one of these things where you're preaching patience to the fans or you're also maybe talking about patience for yourself too, because Jeremy Pruitt wants to win. He understands he doesn't have the kind of personnel.
You don't think it's going to piss him off losing games?
You know it's going to.
Patience for himself. Yeah. And sometimes you coach yourself. Sometimes you self-evaluate. The most important thing in coaching is self-evaluation. Because what do we talk about with some of these coaches that don't make it, how hard-headed they are? What do we talk about with Les Miles?
Kept
ramming his head
change.
Against the wall, yep. Trying to run the same offense and not pushing the ball down the field. So these coaches that can't adapt, that can't change, that can't morph, those are the ones that aren't going to be around very long. The ones who don't think they need to recruit. Coach Spurrier, eventually it's going to catch up with you. At some point in time, it's going to catch up with you. So you have to adapt, you have to change, and self-evaluation is the most important part of that.